Happy to have you back, Dan.
Thanks for having me, Nima.
And let's get started with the conflict in the Middle East. How do you find the current state of the conflict with the assassination of Nasrallah and what's going on between, as we talk, we know that there are fights going on in the southern part of Lebanon between Israelis and Lebanese?
Yeah, we've just heard that there may be some beginnings of a ground invasion or special forces or something. The assassination of Hassan Nasrallah is sickening, and it's the problem is it's done with U.S. bombs, with U.S. intelligence most likely, and with U.S. approval almost certainly. And even after the fact, you get Harris come out, you know, now she's trying to distinguish herself or act as the spokesman for this sick administration. And she said that it would provide a measure of clarity or mercy or justice for his many victims, or you know, just completely out of touch with the whole rest of the world and with reality on the ground. And so you have these two bubbles of steroid-induced Zionist fervor that are inside the United States and inside of the entity of Israel. And it is truly amazing to watch it happening. Your mouth is kind of agog at how is it possible that they thought you could slaughter a whole bunch of people? First of all, the thing with the the pagers, you know, the remote control,
walkie talkies.
I mean, it's so sickening, and it provokes a heartfelt reaction in the minds of normal people, and it just brandishes every stereotype that they've had to live up to, the cynicism, the colonial exceptionalism, the idea that the people against them are subhumans, and the irony of having people speak for them, quoting older historical atrocities while they are committing those atrocities right in front of our eyes and in front of hundreds of millions of viewers worldwide in the modern era of communication, that you actually see this happening right in front of us. And I think one of the things that it's important, because something leaves you scratching your head, right? It does. It even me, even living here, growing up with this this albatross around our necks, it's an amazing thing to see it happening and see no one even budge. And I think that it's important to talk about this unspoken, you know, elephant in the middle of the room, and what Zionism is for American history, American politics, American ideology, American Christianity, and the sense of duty to bring forth the truth of Jesus, right? Basically, and to promote the second coming of the Messiah and the Son of God. That this is this is not something that people talk about. Even it's become a political non-entity. Nobody will mention this. And I think a lot of people, especially the progressive left who support Israel because they understand the history of the Judeocide committed by the Germans. They understand the othering of a non-conforming people, and therefore they vote for the underdog, sort of, you know. And the problem is that nobody will even mention outside of its own circles. This is an amazingly deep hole, Nima, in American, I can't even say political philosophy, because it's a mindset. The idea that you're not talking about political reality in the Middle East. You're not talking about imperialism or colonialism. You're not talking about settlements or right from wrong. You're talking about summoning, doing the right thing to bring back Jesus for the second coming. Literally, there are 40% or so of Americans who self-identify as born-again Christians. And not all of them the same, this would also include dispensationalist Catholics and any of this, the adherents of what they came to call biblical inerrancy. That is, the word of God is complete and finite and written in stone. And so therefore, the raising of the fatted calf and the slaughtering of the red heifer on the Temple Mount, according to Numbers 19, going back to the Old Testament, it's hard to even say. I'm not I haven't studied it in depth, but you can't live in this country without hearing it and watching it and kind of stumbling on it. It's not what politicians ever talk about. You don't hear anyone mention all this in public outside of the, I don't know, revivalist tents of the South and the Midwest, there is a steadfast belief. Are they willing to die for Israel? I don't think so. I don't know. But are they willing to die for Jesus, to gain entrance into the kingdom of heaven? Absolutely. These are millions of people who believe that we are in the end times. We are in the last days. And Numbers 19 is the section of the Bible that outlines the slaughter of the red heifer on the Temple Mount. This is what is going to happen. Zion, the country, the state of Zion, has to be existing and defended in order for the second coming to happen. So these people have an enormous amount of money and power and kind of sway among many of the masses in the United States. And it's really kind of scary. This is, the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, this is the statute for the ritual which the Lord has commanded. Tell Israelites to procure for you a red heifer without defect and free from every blemish and on which no yoke has ever been laid. Now, there is a farmer in Texas who in 2017 sent a whole bunch of young red heifers to Israel to use as pets, because there was illegal to transfer cattle. Like there's no, that was against the export laws. But so that these would be kept as pets and used. And people are, this intimate net phenomenon, these people pay attention to this. These people have, and this comes about in a kind of defect of American Christianity, that is this biblical inerrancy, the rise of the Book of Revelations from Jonathan Edwards or whatever in the 1830s, I guess, and is now widely held. The whole idea of the second coming in general, of course, is a major belief of Christianity, but it also is this thing that follows the revelations in terms of what, you know, the believing Christians are going to live from the Pentecost until the rapture. Now, they will be raptured after, or is it, see, I don't, you know, this stuff is so complicated and so bizarre that it's kind of, it's hard to even, you know exactly where they're going or coming from. But the rapture will be God taking the chosen, and they will lift off from the world and leave the sinners behind. And so there's 144,000 or something that are going to be raptured, and everyone else is going to be left behind. And then we will have the tribulations, which is the God reckoning with the sinners on earth, and the Messiah will return for the millennium, for his millennium, thousand-year reign of peace. And you know, it sounds like it's shocking to say, like, well, okay, lots of people believe lots of things, right? But this is a major voting group, an educational group, a religious group, people who have taken over, what do you call them, parent-teacher councils and school committees all over the country. And this idea that the heifer will be sacrificed to purify the throng is very, very poignant and very, very present in people's day-to-day beliefs, right? This is zealotry beyond the meaning of the word, you know. And the interesting thing, of course, is that, of course, this the classic definition of dispensationalism is the distinction between Israel and the church. It's not God's chosen people, it's the sinners and the non. So that's what the rapture is about. So they are full-fledged supporting the reestablishment of the kingdom of Zion, right? But what they are is cannon fodder, because they will burn in the fires of damnation while the good and believing Christians ascend into heaven to be seated at the right hand of the Father. And the idea that Zionists who take from Theodore Herzl and are establishing a state in Israel for the permanent settlement of the Jews in Palestine, and these whack jobs, is an amazing marriage of satanic proportions. And so this is what most Zionists in the United States are not Jewish Zionists, they're Christian Zionists. And this is why their support for a state of Israel or for the establishment of Zion is so deep. And the thing is, this is the same people, this is the head of the Southern Baptist Convention going back 40 years, who raised holy hell. So pardon the expression, I don't know who I'm talking to with this, right? But he, you know, he said off the cuff, he said this, with all due respect to those dear people, my friends, the Lord God Almighty does not hear the prayer of a Jew. And everyone is shocked and like, whoa, what? And these are the right wing Christian evangelical, you know, flamethrowers that have taken control, who believe that Jesus believes in a bigger defense budget and Jesus believes in the supremacy of the United States. So it's amazing to see when it plays out the way it's playing out. And it's hard to imagine why this is the way it is. because people are not, I don't think that human beings are stupid more so than in any, in one place than in any other place. I think obviously people are kept under, you know, surveillance and special training, and the people they look up to, the history they read, can all be guided, but there's something really deep. And I think most people who think that they are supporting U.S. policy from the inside, from the United States, don't understand that connection. They don't understand the craziness that they're signing on to, which is really quite insane. I mean, there are people who believe that they are living the last days. So you say, why would they start a simultaneous war in Gaza, in Lebanon, in Ukraine, and to fire ballistic missiles at a nuclear power? What are they looking for? Like instant death? Well, sadly, there are many among them who are not concerned. I know we've talked about ideology and how the American perspective, you asked me a couple of weeks ago of why it seems to be getting more ideological and more sterner. And I think that there is something we haven't really touched on, which is this dark side, the religious fervor. That it really is. I mean, now talk about exceptionalism. That is handed down by God. And since their God is the one true God, they have no problems demonizing Islam, which they've done. The left and right have done the same thing, helping to demonize Islam. Aren't they crazy? Making a mockery of Muslim faith, tradition, language, culture, and completely ignoring and denying the driving force of their respective countries' maniacal attempt to control and therefore eventually destroy humanity. It really is quite an incredible thing. This is like, you know, you can take it just going back even further, like to the Crusades, the idea that Christianity is going to save humanity and the salvation by the death of your opponents is the triumph of the Lord's work. Onward, Christian soldiers. I mean, it's quite scary. I'm not sure if that's what you meant by the dark side, but that is it's very dark.
Yeah.
See, I laughed again. I don't, people don't like that. But I laugh at how dark it is, but it's.
Then when you look at the situation right now between Iran and the United States and with the new government in Iran and the way that they're trying to talk with Washington, and right now it seems that Netanyahu is doing everything he wants to do. How do you understand the situation that Iran is in right now? Because on one side, they have to react to what Netanyahu did in the inauguration of the new president of Iran and right now to Hezbollah, and they killed many Iranian officials as well.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, do you see the situation they're in right now?
I think what Netanyahu is doing exactly what he wants. Like you say, he is trying to provoke. And of course, I refer to the whack jobs in my previous comments as well, that they are trying to provoke. They want war. It's shocking to see how obviously and how belligerently they go and poke and try to get the war enlarged, regionalized, and to obviously, specifically the new government in Iran, or actually anyone outside of the U.S. thinking that they could restart or kind of make inroads diplomatically talking to the United States is a danger to the Israeli regime, and thus one of the points has to be to encourage a split with between the U.S. and Iran. What the Israelis desperately want, the same as Zelensky wants NATO to do, they want to drag the U.S. into war with Iran, again with Syria, with the entire Arab world, and they want to, well, I can't even end that sentence, because what do they want? They can't win that. So do they want to humiliate? I'm not even sure how that winds up, because I don't think they're stupid. How can they possibly think that they would win that kind of scenario? But I think they take it country by country, and they'd like to see Iran, to undo the progress that Iran has made, despite and in fact because of the radical sanctions against the government and against the people, and to see that finally they are overcoming this terrible stricture that has gone on them because of their trying so hard to make peace with the West. And I don't know. I mean, there are many schools of thought in Iran about whether they should be looking for this rapprochement, whether they should be leaning further toward the alignment with China and with especially with Russia. Now, there is some, I don't know what you've heard, that there was some sort of intel very deep in the high up in the Iranian intel establishment that gave them the whereabouts of Nasrallah over the past few days. Have you heard this rumor being spread? No? Oh. No. Huh. Okay. Well, I don't know where. I just read this online today, but this is okay, it's from a Western source. It was from either the Wall Street Journal or some that they're and so it could be a false lead, you know, that a lot of them are, that this is a breach of Iranian intelligence that gave them the coordinates of where he would be. And so that they were complicit, or there was this is, Israel does this all the time to it was such a stunning.
Because they know how to use the media to manipulate everything.
Right. And now you can say this horrific thing that everyone outside of the U.S., everyone thinks is a terrorist act, is a great score and a great, such a great thing. It's amazing that they were able to succeed again against all odds. And that is probably where the rumor comes from. But it's interesting that the view of media is so reversed, was inside the United States and outside the United States. It really is quite, quite incredible.
Then when you look at Zelensky's visit to the United States and the policy of the United States right now, considering the conflict in Ukraine, do you find it that we're heading toward more escalations between NATO and Russia? Or you think that with this new attitude on the part of Russia, they're trying to send a message to NATO not to escalate the situation with Ukraine? Are they getting the message, or they're not understanding what Russia is talking about?
Well, I think it's pretty clear that someone in the Biden administration woke up at least a little bit, and they sent Zelensky packing with no reassurance, and flat out, we'll talk to you later. And the classic, what's interesting is that, you know, politicians as a species are generally slimy or considered to be liars and flip-floppers. And so those who seem to be on your side will classic joke is wait till after the election, wait till after primaries. I can't really help you right now, but wait till after the election. And it's so classic that it's become a classic joke. That's what Obama said about Palestine to someone when he was running for the Senate, you know, and wait till after the election. And the report is that Biden said something along these lines to Zelensky. And what it means is you're done, proxy man, that you are ready to be dipped in oil and flung into, you know, the Roman forest in a pit of tar fire, whatever. There is no way that they were going to go along with long-range missiles into Russia. I know that it was on the verge, and the other Scott Ritter has said, you know, that we came, it's only a few minutes away from Armageddon, and et cetera, et cetera. But the United States has backed off so far as, and now a flood of people have come forward with new, how the Ukrainians are losing. This is really bad. We need to escalate. We need to do this. And these are too little too late newcomers or people who are talking, you know, out there behinds about things that wouldn't have worked a year ago or 2 years ago, but they're saying now's the time when we have to escalate, we have to bring more of this, we have to do this, we have to do that. And that's not, I think, I can cross my fingers, I think that this is clearly not going to happen. The British, who were now seem to be chiefly responsible, or the NATO arm responsible for the Kursk provocation, are still really, I mean, listen to Lammy Ding Dong there with his threats about calling out, you know, Russia on their imperialism and how he's going to make them pay and all this stuff. And we're going to keep it going forever. That is not something that the U.S. can do. Now, they've said so to Bibi in Israel before, several times, like, you guys got to come in. You got to go after Iran for us. And they, you get the idea that in back channels and somehow behind the scenes, they said, well, you know, that's really not, we will defend you, but we're not going to do that. And what is sad for proxies from Israel to Zelensky and so on, from now until death do us part, proxies lose their value to the user of said proxy, and they have nothing. There's no way. It was great to hide behind. It was great to use as a battering ram, as kind of a straw man, and as a shield. But Russia is, Blinken can come out and say, like, oh, it's nothing. They're not saying anything new. But of course, that is essentially true. They aren't saying anything new. There are no red lines. Russia has said this all from the very beginning. And it's obvious to any child that you cannot throw, you know, ballistic missiles at a nuclear power without expecting the makers of the missiles, the guiders of the missiles, the people responsible for tracking the missiles and providing the sites and the targets and everything, and the people to track them and maintain them, of also being targets, of being participants. It's clear. And so it was, I think, inevitable that there would be some kind of a tipping point. And I don't want to, again, I don't want to sound happy, because these people have a lot more power than I will ever have, as I keep saying. But they think that either it's too early because of the election. There can't be any October surprise. So there can't be anything happening right now anyway. But in the midterm, there certainly is no way that that would ever yield anything but disaster. And think of it. I mean, Scott is right. That is a horrific. And Don DeBar, who's with was with Pacific Radio for years, has said this for a long time. This is a threat to provoke World War III. And they just refuse to listen until now. And I don't know. I don't know if we're right, but it feels like they're starting to allow more discussion of Ukraine losing, of this being a disaster. There are more in all of their own papers. There have been a few articles in the last week or so about how, and that's what they do. They just march in lockstep once the order comes down that this is no longer the narrative we're selling. And so you see a few things very late, like I said, too little, too late. But, oh, my God, this was always a scam. Just like, you know, the apartheid regime and the people saying 30 years later, oh, we were always against that. Well, why did you fight to maintain relations for so long while the rest of us were telling you that you were ruining a people in a country? That's what plausible deniability is. You just, and then over time, you just say, well, yeah, and they will. This is my prediction. They'll say, oh, remember the Ukraine thing? That was a disaster. Yeah, that was a bad idea. I don't know where we'll be then. I'm hoping most of us will be alive. We'll have to see.
And how did you find the meeting between Joe Biden and Zelensky, comparing that with the one with Donald Trump?
I mean, we're not privy, right? Obviously. But I think from what the media has told us that Trump basically said, you're not getting any new stuff from us. You know, I don't know. There's really no point in us talking a lot because, you know, and Biden is more in league with Zelensky because, I mean, he started the war with him. You know, Trump was involved, obviously, too. The CIA and the NATO were planning this thing for a long time. But it's an easy sell. Like Trump is like, oh, I don't know what he told you, but you know, we're you're not you're fired. He's gonna say you're fired, and pretend that was his rush all along. Of course, he's not a friend. You know, he's not on the right side of anything. It's just that, you know, what is it? Broken clocks are right twice a day, right? That's, you know, if you do the opposite of everything Biden says, you got to be right actually more than twice a day, actually quite a bit. But I mean, you know, look at what British, what their whole thing is with this. But of course they are, I talked about the, Christian Zionists, really the whole concept of God's people comes from the divine right of kings. You know, that's King James the fifth or sixth or first or whatever calculator you use. You know, this that the kings are chosen by God and answering only to God. And they share the Anglo-US empire quite well. And they seem to do, like, and they keep picking proxies, spitting them out. We'll take Zelensky. We'll try him for a bit. Oh, it's kind of chewy. Yeah. Ugh. Okay, let's try this one. This one's good. Nice and tasty. I don't know why they don't listen or learn, you know? And then you have the people who are their own servants, like Lammy talking at the UN. I was, and I'm speaking, and the Russian representative who is on his phone as I speak with this posh British accent, like, I am the emissary of His Majesty. How dare you not bow before the King of God? And the Russian guys are going to say, why is men talking as if he is King of England? He's not me. They also have no navy, even nothing left. Goodbye. And saying that he's going to, like, that this is the, I don't know, the purvey of his ancestors, all that stuff he went on and on about, is a form of crazy. And I think that, that's another thing about Iran, going back to what you said about what position they're in. I think it's not just Iran. Iran and Russia and China and the rest of the world is watching what might be, crazy uncle or brother-in-law who's drunk off his ass at a family wedding. And you know he's really going to fall down. But you don't want to provoke, you don't want to get, you know, like, this is a dying empire. And it circles the drain and spits venom out everywhere. This is all over southern Lebanon, all over Russia, and all over Palestine and Libya and Syria and Iraq and Afghanistan and Venezuela, not to mention the early years, Nicaragua and Dominican Republic and every other country that begins with a letter. But they have done as much damage as they can, and they will continue doing it on the way down. Now, if you're China and Russia, you say it's not just showing patience. You gotta keep this thing going. It really is a global economy. Oh yeah, dollar sucks, you know, but and they've always used it as a weapon, but we don't want to unplug, we can't unplug the dollar overnight. It will destroy the economy. They can, so you're trying to put, it's like putting an, maybe instead of the drunk brother-in-law or uncle, we should take this senile old man, trying to get him to bed, you have to ease him down, you really don't want to make too much noise, and so don't talk about anything, don't, you know, start any weird discussions about things you know will piss him off. And, you know, maybe if he can just take his medicine and go to bed nicely. I don't think that's possible. But I think that is that it, because people who see how badly the U.S. and its allies have abused all of these countries and peoples all throughout the world. Why don't they just do X, Y, Z? Why don't they just do this? Why don't they just do that? Well, pragmatism is smart, but it's expensive. And, you know, it's like, well, no, we, you know, and you're choosing. It's like the guy with the controller on the trolley. You know, you're choosing, will thousands of people die or will hundreds of millions of people die? Which one we're doing. And we don't want to do the wrong thing. These are very, very dangerous people. And they have a hand in everything, and they're not going to go away. They're not going to relinquish their power without a fight. And so I think it's smart too. I don't think it's just it's not weakness and it's not kindness that Iran has not really pummeled back against Israel in the last several weeks. I think it's smart and it is pragmatic. Besides, there's always time. It's what the Russians said right after the invasion in Kursk. We will get to this. Is right now not a big problem. We take Donetsk and Pokrovsk. We'll see. I don't. I mean, you know. I know. I say that every time. We'll see. But you're dealing the idea of I don't know, thinking that they're speaking with God's voice, both from the Christian Zionists believing in the second coming, or David Lammy, browbeating the Russian representative for not listening while he was on the phone. You know, I mean, it's partly what went on. This is what Chinua Achebe said in Things Fall Apart. He said, when the missionaries came, they had the Bible and we had the land. Right? They asked us to close our eyes and pray. We open our eyes, and now we have the Bible and they have the land. What the hell? And so it's not new. They've done this forever. They were going that we are going, we must civilize the natives and clothe the savages and save the women from sati. That's why we have to conquer India, make it British, so we can save the women from sati. And like, why don't you go back where you came from? We don't really need you here. And sometimes that takes a couple centuries. But I think that I think we're on the right track. I would love to believe that, but we'll have to see what happens. You know, the thing with the American side is that they're raising kids to believe in this stuff. They really are, and it's kind of sad. But I think, you know, what would you say? Dialogue works. You talk to people, you expose them to things that they haven't seen that way before. And a lot of times, you know, people aren't getting what they need from the way these governments are organized. They just aren't. It's scary and poor and dangerous and no fun. And that does speak to people. Depends. If they're 18, they can vote. And then, well, you know, then their life really begins, right?
Yeah. Then, just to wrap up this session, we, with the Zelensky administration, we had Zeluzhny getting out of the administration. The foreign minister, Kabula, his name, I forgot his name. And he got out of the administration. Right now, Budanov, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, he's the chief, the head of intelligence of Ukraine, is talking about he's going to get out of the administration. He's going to resign. And you see that all of those people who were so important when this conflict started, they're getting one by one getting out of this administration. It seems this house of cards is getting devastated. And how do you find it right now, and how the United States is managing the situation inside Ukraine, in your opinion? Is it getting out of the hand? Is it just collapsing?
I think it is collapsing, yes. I think it is, and it is getting out of hand. But I do have to say that this is how proxies work. One guy, it's not just a house of cards. It's a revolving door. It is, I mean, and if you look at it, you look at the administrations in the United States or in you know, Liz Truss, then the other guy, then Bo Johnson, then this one, then that one. Like, you see how you're trying to throw stuff up against the wall and see if it sticks, right? And so if you're collapsing, or if what you're doing is trying all the time to make a puzzle out of ill-fitting pieces, then you're going to keep replacing. There's a guy not Pokrovsk, one where the 72nd Brigade is encircled, and now he was replaced.
Vugledar.
What is that? Oh, Vugledar. Yeah, yes, yes. Vugledar. See, I lose my villages. It's terrible. I'm going to confuse it with Bakhmut and Mariupol pretty soon. We promoted him, which is, you know, the Japanese way of saying give him a job to sit in the corner until everyone goes away. I think that is the nature of a crickety structure, that you keep going and keep going and keep going, and you have to keep replacing them. And if they're smart, they take off. And if they don't do the work they're supposed to do, which is impossible, then they get kicked out. It's like it's similar to like a mob family, you know, that there are hits and there are people who are moved around. You know, there's nothing really left to do. Like, this is now, I think, the third iteration of a Ukrainian armed force that is being annihilated. And so you can kill, you know, 700,000 kids on the front lines, but you also run out of people at the top. Like, how can you keep doing that? And I think Zelensky himself is really, speaking of the end times, I think Zelensky himself is going to have to give up or be put out to pasture, or maybe just retire to one of his, you know, mansions in Miami or wherever. I don't know where these guys, that's where Somoza's people went in Nicaragua. They all went to Miami. We'll take care of him once he gets here. Remember them shopping around trying to put the Shah somewhere? Will you guys take him? No. How about this? Then they did this with Idi Amin. I think Idi Amin wound up in Saudi Arabia for a while. That's what happens at the end. There's nowhere for them to go.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Dan, for being with us. The great pleasure, as always, talking.
Well, thank you. And I will see you again soon. All right.
See you
soon. Easy.